Breaking today on Secchio is a New York councilwoman calls for the DOJ to probe against Alvin Bragg.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Secchio. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Secchio.
Welcome to Secchio, folks. Now, you get this. Coming out of Alvin Bragg's office, you know, putting this together, what happened yesterday with Daniel Penny and, of course, the jury finding him not guilty of the highest charge that Alvin Bragg's DA's office tried to bring against him. Then you look at the cases there that Alvin Bragg attempting to pursue as well. This criminal case that does not make a lot of sense, of course. And when you look at the actual crimes that were attached, there's questions about, was this even a case that could be or should be brought? But what is also interesting is that there are New York City councilwomen and one New York City councilwoman who is calling for the new incoming Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to investigate the politicization of D.A. Bragg's operation. Because you look at the case against Daniel Penny, then you look at the case against President Trump, and you look at these are headline-grabbing cases that seem to be politically motivated, sometimes even racially motivated. And I want you to listen to her. This is someone who, again, a Republican, gets elected out of Queens, but is at this point ready to say the DA needs to be investigated by the DOJ. Take a listen.
Well, it's really simple. I mean, the Manhattan DA has made this racial. We have seen what AG Bragg has been capable and has tried to pursue. And I think between Trump and now, this is the icing on the cake with Penny, convicted at any cost. They make it a vendetta. He is definitely political. This is politicized. And I think he needs to be investigated. I think the whole DA's office in Manhattan needs to be investigated.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to get him for, you know, second-degree manslaughter. They lose. The trial against Donald Trump, I mean, just updating you, we'll get you an update on everything. But when you look at that and you look at the city council members starting to say, you know what, this is the weaponization of our legal system. And this is why oftentimes the people who need to be investigated are yes, the people, the names, right? You have the Alvin Braggs. They're setting the tone. But also that inside their offices, no one seems to be raising their hand and saying, this doesn't seem right. Whether it's the Trump case and trying to bring in a federal law they can't explain to try and call him this convicted felon, this idea. Or if you're talking about a situation like Daniel Penny, which has gone on and on and on, trying to ruin this man's life who just stepped in the way of a bad actor. And what does that tell you in a New York that's trying to get back on its feet? You know, getting back to 100% is a wild, long way away if you've been recently and you see how few people are in the office buildings. There's still a big city, lots of people, vibrant, more vibrant than most cities, especially coming still out of COVID, but a lot of empty spaces. And what does that mean? A lot more opportunities for bad actors. Which means you want to encourage the good actors that if they actually see a crime, a violent crime is occurring or is about to occur, is threatened to occur, that they can take some action to prevent it. And they aren't going to be the one that is demonized. They aren't going to be the enemy. So we will take your calls on that. There's a lot to talk about today. 1-800-684-3110. You know that the deep state is also ramping up its attack on President Trump's cabinet nominees. One of those, Tulsi Gabbard, she got one of those letters from 100 deep state intel folks with a lot of fancy titles. So, you know, anytime they sign on to those letters, a bunch of intelligence agents sign on to tell you that something must be true. We've almost learned that it must be false. That they are only now doing it for their own purposes, political, bureaucratic, because they want their own people in charge. Support the work of the ACLJ. Of course, talking about Tulsi Gabbard this time. Go to ACLJ.org, sign the petition to get her confirmed. Secchio, as we said, we are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So first, you have someone on the New York City Council calling for the new Trump DOJ's Civil Rights Division to launch an investigation into what's going on in the Manhattan DA's office with Alvin Bragg. Is there enough focus on actual crime, or is this an office that has been what it appears to be, weaponized for political purposes, whether it's cases against Donald Trump or cases against Daniel Penney? Quickly, Will, just an update for people. We were looking it up. The cases against Donald Trump, there's big decisions to be made there.
That's right. So as a reminder for everyone, that was the 34 felony counts that D.A. Bragg conjured up out of saying it was a state law attached to something. Basically, they could charge you in the state for a violation of a campaign finance law if that crime happened. There was never a charge federally, but he still went forward with this novel idea that he could charge President Trump for committing a crime which he'd never been charged, much less had the justice system look at. But that was that case, and it went forward, and there was a conviction. And with the transition that is coming up, the election, there was question about whether or not that would stand. The judge, Judge Mershon, that's the case most people know this as, is Judge Mershon's case, had recently postponed sentencing. He adjourned the sentencing hearing, which was supposed to be on November 26th, and did not relist it on the docket anywhere. So it is at this point postponed indefinitely. But also, he gave the defense, so Trump's attorneys, until December 2nd to file a motion to dismiss, and the prosecution had until yesterday. So Alvin Bragg had to file their opposition to the motion to dismiss yesterday before Judge Mershon. So we could hear what the judge is deciding to do when he takes into account all the immunity issues, the transition team issues, and now this motion to dismiss. Any day at this point, as he deliberates from these briefs from both the defense and the prosecution, another DA Bragg overstep, but we'll see how the judge comes out with this.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the attorney general in New York. She says she's not going to stop fighting against President Trump, though. So she's not going to drop the case. But right now, the case is before the appellate court system there, and that court is leaning towards and been looking at, some are predicting. Hard to predict courts, of dismissing that entire case as well, the civil cases that the Attorney General attempted to bring and brought against President Trump. I want to bring in Harry Hutchinson right now because, Harry, the bigger, I guess, discussion point, and it will have to be done in a way that I think is fair. It's got to be a way that's transparent enough for a Department of Justice investigation if you were to launch a civil rights department investigation, so a federal probe into a state DA's, a city DA's office. Here would be Alvin Bragg's. But this idea that if we've seen a weaponized legal system that may have started at the federal level, but is certainly what it's done is it's inflicted in all of the different political levels. So anybody who seems to be elected, if they have any law enforcement job on the left, they've let their politics start guiding them. And whether it's issues of race or purely just Democrat, Republican politics, when we see Daniel Penney's case, when we see the Trump case, is this idea that we'll keep fighting against him while he's, you know, about to become president of the United States. I think it could warrant an investigation, and it is the way to root out weaponization. It's not saying we're going to try to put all these people in jail. That's not what an investigation would do. What it would look at is whether or not they are properly conducting the decision-making of when to bring charges and against who.
I think you're precisely correct. And so the fundamental issue from a justice perspective is whether or not every American is entitled to due process of law without bias, without a focus either on race or politics. And so if you look at the history of the FBI, for instance, in terms of them going after Donald Trump, this reaches back to 2015, 2016, with Lisa Page, with Peter Strzok. with individuals within the FBI department who essentially have lied in order to gain a FISA warrant against Donald Trump. This process has continued with respect to the invasion of President Trump's residence in Florida. It also involves, for instance, the FBI going after pro-life Catholics in Richmond, Virginia, in Los Angeles, and in Portland, Oregon. And it now likely includes Alvin Bragg, who is the Manhattan District Attorney, who has brought racially inflammatory charges against Daniel Penny in a case that should never have been brought. So there is a clear and substantial basis for investigating the Manhattan District Attorney and for rooting out corruption within the Manhattan District Attorney's office and possibly bringing charges for a violation of President Trump's civil rights. Keep in mind, in the Manhattan case brought by Alvin Bragg against Donald Trump, it was grounded in a suspicious, surreptitious, if you will, a campaign finance violation, which was never proven. And so I think at the end of the day, I think Vicky Palladino, the New York City councilwoman, is right to at least raise this issue.
And Professor Hutchison, what many on the left, if something like this were to take place, if the DOJ Civil Rights Division were to start looking at places like the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, the people on the left would cry foul. They would say, this is the retribution we were talking about, weaponizing the DOJ, going after his political enemies. But that's precisely what the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ is for. They all the time, constantly, are looking at local police forces, local district attorney's offices, and making sure that this entire web of state offices and state judiciaries are falling in line with what the Constitution and the federal law provides as protections for people's civil rights. So we should caution people that if they hear the left saying, look, we told you so, this is the job of the Civil Rights Division. If you look up Civil Rights Division, they're always coming to an agreement with police departments, with local DAs to not prosecute in a certain way or to change their policies here, because that's the role of the oversight of the federal government to make sure that policing and the prosecutions on a state level are still protecting the federal constitutional rights of all Americans. So it doesn't end necessarily in a trial or a charging of someone. Most of the time, these things end in an agreement, a settlement of some sort with the federal government that they're not going to continue violating civil rights.
Absolutely. So I think the quintessential issue that's before us in this particular arena is the possibility of local corruption, local weaponization of the Justice Department, local politicization of the District Attorney's Office. And clearly, I think most Americans would agree that the Manhattan District Attorney, under Alvin Bragg's leadership, has launched a ton of highly politicized and weaponized cases which make little sense. So I think at the end of the day, the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, under the leadership most likely of Pam Bondi, should consider investigating what the New York Manhattan District Attorney has done over the last several years.
Listen, what we know is that there's plenty of people inside the Department of Justice and plenty of divisions. I think Harmy Dillon's been nominated to head up the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice. She's was the California GOP chair, has a law firm that's been involved in the Republican politics and politics in general, and the law around election law and issues like that. So certainly, again, these are individuals that know part of their job is to go in there and get these agencies. I mean, this is the biggest lift for Pam Bondi. It's the biggest lift for each of these division chairs and deputies there is. Can we, in the amount of time we have, whether it's the entire 4 years that you serve, and then a different president's coming in. We know that. So in those 4 years, can you clean up the reputation and the way Americans see the Department of Justice and the FBI? Can you clean it up and also get it back on track? Get it back on track by doing the right things, which is to focus on the bad guys, focus on the crime, focus on the gangs, focus on keeping Americans safe from terrorism and other issues, especially when you're involving the FBI, instead of becoming a political kind of back and forth issue. We don't want our legal system to look like that. And of course, even our confirmation system, when we talk about the president, who they want to put in their cabinet, has gotten so politicized that a former Democrat, you know, becomes unacceptable to lead the to be director of national intelligence. That former Democrat, of course, worked with us here on Seculo, and we are calling for you to support her nomination, Tulsi Gabbard, at ACLJ.org. We'll talk about. All right, welcome back to Seculo. If you get our emails you saw today, we're calling for on you to sign up on a petition to stand with Tulsi Gabbard and her nomination as Director of National Intelligence and to be in the cabinet of President Trump. Tulsi is someone we've worked with here in Seculo for over a year. We worked with her on talking through so many different issues. Not only that, we actually are representing her as well. You remember, we're defending Tulsi from the deep state and the TSA's treatment of her as a terrorist suspect with multiple FOIAs that we already have filed. We're battling the radical left in multiple lawsuits and ramping up as the attempt to do more attacks on Trump through the nominees themselves. This is a great time to support the work of the ACLJ, and I think just walking through this nomination kind of underscores that, because, again, we have our Faith and Freedom year-in drive right now at ACLJ.org. This dictates kind of to the ACLJ a way for us to plan and budget forward for 2025. And we know there's going to be a lot of battles. There's going to be battles just to get these people in place, right? And we said yesterday, Tulsi was meeting with Senator Graham of South Carolina, Senator Rounds of South Dakota, and Senator Lankford of Oklahoma, friends of ours. And we asked you, if you were in those states, to call, make a friendly call to those senators' offices saying, hey, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, she's someone I've gotten to know through the Seculo broadcast and ACLJ, and I support her nomination. I know they do too. Well, she's also going to be meeting today with Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Senator Rich of Idaho, and Senator Moreno of Ohio. Again, so he's coming in
right
to office. You can call those offices as well. We encourage you to do so. So that is some grassroots action you can take. We also have a petition now officially up at ACLJ.org. And that petition, important for you to sign today. Let's start building the momentum for Tulsi before her confirmation hearings begin, but just as she begins, you know, meeting with this first group of senators on Capitol Hill. They can have serious questions. It's a serious position when you talk about Director of National Intelligence. We have the former acting Director of National Intelligence still on our team here at Seculo, Rick Rennell. But you know they've been going after Tulsi. I mean, we're representing her right now in a case where she's been treated, is treated like a terrorist while she travels. Well, at the same time, Tulsi was able to bring a lot of new people into the if not the party, the MAGA movement. But she herself became a Republican. So she's got Democrats upset. We hear a lot of the same attacks. Let's go through some right now. The first attack, kind of, it's in the news a lot right now, is because it involves Syria, Will. Now, we kind of put the dates together. In 2013, ISIS was formed. And, you know, we wrote a New York Times bestseller on ISIS. On May 2014, you started to see ISIS spreading out their attacks outside of Syria, where they wanted to establish their caliphate, and did for a period of time. And so we saw a attack at the Jewish Museum of Belgium, the shooting there in May of 2014. You see a attack in Queens, New York, a hatchet attack again in 2014. November of 2015, there was the attack in Paris, the Bataclan at the concert that left so many people killed. Then we saw the attacks in California at the in San Bernardino, the Orlando nightclub attack in June of 2016. And then after, this is long after, right? President Obama is now gone. A red line was drawn that if, you know, Assad used chemical weapons, the U.S. would take him out of power or stop at least working with the groups or staying away from engaging with the groups who were trying to protect him. There was a three-way war in Syria going on, at least, between ISIS, the Assad regime, a breakoff, which is more similar to the group who has taken power now in Syria, which is Al-Qaeda's former kind of military group, the Al-Nusra Front, which was not part of ISIS. It was somewhat separate. And, of course, then you had the United States get involved directly on the ground. And so, and then that meant Russia was on the ground and Hezbollah was on the ground in Iran. And so you had so many different actors. Calling it three-dimensional chess is not fair. But at the end of the day, in January 2017, Tulsi went on a fact-finding mission to Syria. Now, this is at a time, again, new administration is just about to come into office. So a change in foreign policy. But at that point, al-Baghdadi, still alive, still the leader of ISIS. So this war, which had raged, which had killed so many people, could it be prevented without, could there be any way this war was brought to an end? Could we figure out exactly, you know, who's this side, that side? So Tulsi went and met with Assad. And just because she went there and met with him, by the way, she's now been demonized as some agent of Russia or agent of the former Syrian president. When she went and met there with Assad, as she is today, she, I'm sure that that will soon have to come to a close. I don't know when officially it does and how that works with DNI, but she served over two decades in the Army Reserve. She was still in the reserves then. Okay, so Assad knew who was meeting with. A member of Congress was in the U.S. military. She had a top-level security clearance. She has that today, even while she's under this other investigation. And yet, because of that meeting, the left has said, this is how we're going to demonize Tulsi Gabbard. I think the idea here is that the military didn't take any action, was completely silent. Tulsi's continued to actually go higher up in the military with higher rank. She maintained her security clearance. And she's now before, you know, the DNI. If there was anybody that was going to take action, it would have been the military back in 2017. They did not.
That's right, Jordan. And when you
tell you there's a lot here that she probably could never tell us on the air or even off the air, but that if she has to take these senators behind closed doors, even into a secured room to do the briefing, she could.
That's right. And also on that fact-finding trip, it wasn't just a meeting with Assad. There was also meetings with the Kurdish groups as well that were fighting in this civil war and other groups to get an assessment.
We were also supporting with weapons.
Right. So you're getting an assessment. And our fighters, our troops are still in Syria right now.
We know.
Helping
we
the Kurds.
Yep.
So when you look at all of that and you think, maybe a member of Congress, person in the military who has been to war zone, going there to try to figure out what's going on, especially with the litany of the ISIS attacks as they were spreading their influence. You have to remember, it wasn't until President Trump was in office that he put down ISIS. ISIS was expanding. ISIS stands for the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So the concern that a caliphate would take over the region in Iraq and Syria, maybe a member of Congress is going to figure out what's the best path forward to keep Americans safe. Not saying I'm going to go prop up Assad, but trying to figure out what the geopolitical strategy here to go back, as I inform my other members of Congress, as I inform my superiors in the military, maybe, just maybe, there's something a little bit more than CNN can see from their perch in D.C. when they criticize her and try to say she's a puppet of Assad, a puppet of Putin. It's ridiculous. It's so absolutely insulting to a woman who has achieved such great things in her career, has done so much as a patriot, and they're going to sit here and try to say she's some foreign asset. And that's why our members, you've gotten to know her over the past year on this broadcast. That's why we have to have someone like her who is smart, accomplished, and will get the job done and root out the deep state in the Department of National Intelligence.
You know, it starts with Donald Trump, but they say, okay, they look at him, they say he's president, he's got a lot of different things to do. But then he chooses Tulsi Gabbard to put right into their mix of all of their intelligence agencies. You want to rout out the deep state, you want to root that out of government? You send in someone who is not afraid to take on the issue regardless of politics and partisan politics. They're not afraid. Tulsi isn't. Sign the petition. Let's get her confirmed to this position. ACLJ.org. Sign the petition today and donate.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. So we are launching a campaign today. You get our emails. It's in your inbox. Maybe you've already seen it, to support Tulsi Gabbard's nomination, of course, too, as Director of National Intelligence. She begins meeting with senators this week. She already started yesterday. She met with Senator Graham, Senator Rounds, and Lankford. She also will be meeting with today Senator Cotton and Senator Rich, the incoming senator of Ohio as well, Senator Moreno. So they will all get those individual meetings. Then there will be a confirmation hearing. The hearing is when things usually get testy. The hearing is things when it can sometimes turn partisan, though in Tulsi's case, there will be a lot of Republicans she's meeting with who aren't as familiar with her personally necessarily, because when she was in Washington, D.C., as an elected official, she was a Democrat, though certainly was someone willing to go against the narrative and was not, you know, lockstep with the party in every vote, ran for president in 2020, said some things and issues like on abortion the Democrats didn't like, and suddenly she became, I think Hillary Clinton started it.
Yep.
She was a Russian agent. You know, she battled as well, and was someone who was utilized in debate prep with Harris, because she came out against Harris for the amount, the level of the amount of black people who were being charged in California for very low level drug crimes when Harris was attorney general. And that kind of took Harris out of the race. She never made it to an actual vote, to a primary. And so we know, Will, and we've pulled it together, that the left and Democrats saw the potential in Tulsi Gabbard years ago. They just didn't like where her politics developed over time as she got older and as she had more experience in the military.
That's right. And so this is a supercut of people on the left, on faces you'll recognize as well if you're watching, talking about how great Tulsi Gabbard is before she had even questions about the ideology of the left. Let's go ahead and play bite four.
Watch out for the next superstar. Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard is a rising star in this party. Tulsi Gabbard should be here tonight. The reality is we do not have enough young veterans in this party, enough young women in this party, enough people of color in this party.
You're considered a rising star in the Democratic Party. You had a position of leadership in the Democratic National Committee.
Tulsi's story is really, I think, tailor-made for Hollywood. I half expect Natalie Portman to be vying for the role any day now, because this story is not to be believed.
Tulsi Gabbard, she is going to be the one to watch tonight at the DNC.
And Tulsi Gabbard, she's an Iraq War veteran. Yeah. Yesterday, she was promoted from captain to major in the Hawaii National Guard. Yeah, so she certainly is a rising star. The fact that she's not here tonight, for whatever reason, is unfortunate.
I don't know, but in a battle, I want her in my trench. I feel that
much. Me too.
So there you go. Now, she was disinvited because, again, wasn't playing the politics that the DNC liked. It was causing trouble for the mainstream candidates who she's questioned. She's questioned Republicans. She's questioned Democrats, Will, about their politics of the again, of war, and the idea that that's such a moneymaker in D.C., and, you know, people talk about this. They used to hear the words like military-industrial complex, Will, and kind of just move right by it. And then a lot more people started thinking, you know what, why were we in Afghanistan this long? When we saw the withdrawal from Afghanistan that was so heinous and so horrendous by this administration. And you ask, you know, to get to that point, this is what we fought for, is to have to run away because the Taliban was seizing Kabul in 3 days instead of, you know, months. And by the way, even if they were right on the months, then why? What were we there for as well? Well, because if it was just to get bin Laden, that should have been special forces, smaller groups, in a targeted manner. But hey, that doesn't pay the machine. That doesn't keep Northern Virginia lights on and all the different contractors out there. And if you question that as a member of Congress, it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. They were coming after you then. But then Donald Trump came around. And he kind of shared those views too. Like, I don't want to send people to war if I don't have to. Let's use diplomacy. Let's use other threats. Let's use special forces, individualized attacks. But let's try to do everything we can not to have mass troop mobilizations. And you know what Republicans have said, and the majority of Americans? I agree. Support Tulsi Gabbard's nomination. Go to aclj.org/sign today. Jeff Balaban there oversees ACLJ Jerusalem. And Jeff, I want to talk to you about something that, you know, listen, people are trying to figure out. I don't think it's been fully, and it won't be fully figured out in a day or two, but kind of what Syria will start looking like as these groups that have come together to oust Assad. And right now, you've got a lot of celebrations in the street, and people like what they're hearing from these groups' leaders. Of course, we have to remind people, the group that's in charge here is still on the U.S. designated terror list. We'll start with that as a terrorist group. They have come out and made promises that they are going to respect the rights of women, that there won't be any new like Islamist-style laws there or that are forced by the government. They've also said there'd be freedom of religion, which would be, again, something that Assad protected to an extent for certain groups, not all, but for some groups that were a little bit different than what you'd see usually in that part of the world. But of course, Jeff, at the end of the day, we can't forget that they all have had, all of these groups kind of coalesced in the fact that they had gotten their start with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, you know, the rule that the enemy of my enemy is my friend really doesn't apply in most cases in the Middle East. There's a lot of enemies against each other, and most of them are our enemies as well. And so no one yet knows how this is going to fall out. You know, Israel, and there were discussions today here that I had with people, Israel's intelligence is spectacular. Obviously, that beeper attack, for example. But Israel's intelligence is spectacular in terms of where the bad guys are going to be, how to get to them, really spectacular. However, anticipating what other countries are going to do, not always so great, as we saw that on October 7th. We saw that in the 73 war, famously. And so Israel itself is taking stock about what this means for its future. What we can say is that in the past 48 hours, what's being reported here in Israel, that the first part is done, meaning from Israel's perspective, they've destroyed the Syrian strategic capabilities that could be used to launch attacks on Israel, because Israel had a fully mechanized army. And now it's in the hands of who knows how many different sectors of terrorist organizations and jihadi and militant organizations. And in that case, what's also interesting is that America helped in this case. According to Israeli news reports, 175 separate attacks or targets were hit by Americans now, because everyone recognizes that Syria was used to stockpile very serious chemical, nuclear weapon, well, not nuclear, I'm sorry, chemical and biological weapons, even, according to many reports, from the Iranian regime. And of course, nukes is the next step, which is now that they've gone after this in Syria, the discussion is it time to go after Tehran as well? But in terms of what the future holds, there is a slim hope that something will be cobbled together that will mean some kind of safety and security and stability. But by and large, remember, everyone was celebrating what they call the Arab Spring in Egypt. It ended up being a disaster. This may end up being a disaster as well.
Yes, I mean, we saw it in Egypt. We saw it in Libya. And I think that what we honestly, Jeff, I think that because there's so many other issues going on in the world, that until this got close to Assad actually going, which was just the last few days, this wasn't even being highly reported on in the United States or even followed that closely in the Western world. Sometimes you'd hear about attacks in Syria focused on Iranians that happened to be there, but not really the idea that the Assad regime or these other groups, that there was an actual reality that we would wake up to see Assad, you know, with his family fleeing in Moscow and then uncertainty about, you know, who is going to be in charge. What we have seen, though, Jeff, is the Biden administration already start throwing out with the final few, you know, month they've got in office, that they are looking at removing the main group who was part of, and their leader who was part of overthrowing the Assad regime, because they have said some good things. His name, Mohammed Ghazi Jalali, that's a Syria's prime minister. HTS is the terror group. That group is being led by Abu Mohammed al-Golani. He's been designated a terror organization, been linked to Al-Qaeda, did cut ties with the group, did denounce the group in 2016. So there were some changes there. Now, they didn't denounce them during the September 11th attacks, though. So remember that in their view of the United States. But then they might rush to try and remove the group from the terror list. I think that the probably better move is let's see how they treat their own people first before we start making international decisions.
I think that's right, Jordan. Look, Israel is already stepping in to protect the Kurds in the region, the Christians in the region. There are a lot of minority groups that need protection now. Let's also put this against the backdrop. I mean, there are over 20 million Arab Muslim refugees from this region circulating around the world right now, because there is an inherent problem that's been going on here for quite a while, for decades and decades in this region. And what we're seeing now played out in a microcosm in Syria is a bunch of different groups. They've overthrown a dictator who was brutal. He was terrible, but you know, he was relatively stable. So stability has some value when you're talking about lessers of evils. We don't know what's going to emerge here, but it's what seems to be clear is that the domino effect of what happened when the Gazans launched that horrific attack on October 7th against Israel, and Israel was forced to respond, the domino effect of Hamas, and not just Hamas, but those in Gaza holding on to Israel's hostages, and by the way, including American citizens, and not releasing them, and therefore this war going on, the domino effect of that triggering a response and attacks from Lebanon is now expanding out. And so I don't think that they really would have expected Israel to have been so successful. But at this point, people are talking here about the potential of the Iranian regime realizing maybe it needs to wave a white flag about its nuclear ambitions, but for real this time, because they recognize that the gloves are really off. Israel has the right and the ability, it always has the right, but the Americans restraining Israel, which has happened since October 7th, the Biden administration restraint against Israel, it's coming apart. Everyone knows Trump is coming into office. And so the ability to flex to create stability here in the Middle East, really Israel is the tip of that spear. And that's what they feel here in Israel.
Jeff, as you look at the geography of where Syria is, many people, we haven't really thought about Syria because it's been in such a stalemate for their civil war for the past decade. But historically, Syria was, as it borders Israel in the Golan Heights area, the Syrian regime was just like Hezbollah for the Iranians. They were one of the proxies, so that Iran had Israel surrounded with Hamas in Gaza, the PA in the West Bank, even, or Judea and Samaria, even though they may not have been the militant arm, there were still the sympathies there. And then you had Hezbollah in the north, and then the Assad regime in Syria. The concern, I wonder, in Israel is when you had such a stalemate, and obviously they are happy Assad is gone, but that something like a resurgence of ISIS, which I reminded people earlier was the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, puts potentially a caliphate, a second world dominant ideology, not just the Iranians, but a caliphate driven Islamic terrorist organization, potentially as a neighbor to Israel. When you look at Damascus to Israel on the map, it's a couple hours drive. What do you get and read from there? With, I know we talked about the devil you know kind of issue, but with a stalemate there, are there concerns that a new terror threat could rise right next to Israel?
Oh, absolutely. And what's extraordinary, and I'm glad you raised that, what's extraordinary is people immediately took to social media saying, oh, this is, you know, Israel's their ambition to grab territory, because now there are scenes of Israeli troops moving in that direction and moving into what had been Syria. Remember, all these countries, those lines are drawn by European colonialists on their way out. There's not really a natural Syrian border there. This is all created, and the peoples who live there have been, there's been friction, been rubbing against this now for decades and decades. And that's all the fallout you're seeing, are these lines being drawn that don't reflect the actual population. And so, yes, there's a great concern. Israel, at any point, if it had interest in taking over that territory, could have taken over that territory. They didn't. Now, and I will say this, if we remember, when President Trump was president, he acknowledged Israel's right to hold on to the Golan Heights. Absolutely vital. I mean, critical. You can imagine what would be happening now if Israel didn't start with holding on to the Golan Heights, and now launching further into Syrian territory, not because Israel wants to conquer or any kind of conquest, but like America, when America goes to war, it goes just to try to create peace and stability and to protect its own interests and its own citizens. And in this case, that's what Israel's been doing. And so there is a great concern about exactly what you're raising. And Israel's going forward. And yet, of course, people are already saying this is Israel, an Israeli grab for territory. Israel could have grabbed this territory anytime, at any point. As if the last year hasn't shown anything, it's shown that. But Israel has refrained from doing it all at once. is peace. All it wants is stability and security, and it will be the best neighbor possible. And so it's reaching out its hands to all of these factions to see whether any of them will take it. And America, if America is a strong ally in America's interest, and again, people want to know why America should be supporting Israel at all. The answer is because Israel is the outpost that creates the strategic stability at all in the Middle East. It wouldn't exist otherwise. And that's what you're seeing now play itself out as Russia and China are pulling back. And America, because of Trump, is coming to the fore again. All of these things are happening rapid fire.
This is why you support the work of the ACLJ right here. You get these live updates from Jerusalem, from ACLJ Jerusalem's director, Jeff Balaban, joining us, giving these live updates on Syria. You're not going to get anywhere else. Support the work of the ACLJ. Make your donation. Double your impact at ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Secular. So you maybe ask yourself, okay, Jordan, today Tulsi Gabbard, she's meeting with members of the U.S. Senate. You know, the hearings haven't even started. What do we need to sign this petition? We want to make this petition big. Let's just think about this from a perspective. If you're a supporter of the ACLJ or somebody who cares about what we do, shares our work, supports our work financially, tunes into this broadcast or watches this broadcast, however you take part in the ACLJ, you know that we brought Tulsi Gabbard in to the ACLJ, into our broadcast as well, to analyze a lot of what was going on politically and world events because of her military background. So both a political background that would give us insight into a different kind of part of the political world that we mostly knew. I mean, we're operating on the right a lot more than we're operating on the left. And she's been able to, I think, go right through and do what most Americans care about, which is talk about issues and politics in the sense of how do we make things better? Things that we mostly agree on anyways. It's just how we get them done. Some of these things are out battling these big actors. And I mean, the fact that she's got the 100 intel and security officials and former State Department people let her, these are the same people that lied to you about the Hunter Biden laptop. I mean, well, they might not be all the exact same names, but it's the same grouping coming together. They are protecting Washington. And they know that Donald Trump is already a problem. But when you have Donald Trump and he actually puts people in like he did with Rick Grenell as acting DNI, and he puts people in like Tulsi Gabbard, that they have two jobs. One is to be the director of national intelligence, to keep America safe, to keep you safe. But another part of that job, other than briefing the president on the threats and issues like that that face the country, is making sure that the intelligence agencies haven't turned on the United States of America and aren't abusing the laws and their ability of what they can do with the tools that they have and the budgets they have and the lack of oversight to violate American people's own rights. So she has been put in as nominated as director of director of national intelligence for the cabinet. This is someone we work with very close to the ACLJ. And you've gotten to know her at least through this broadcast, maybe through some others as well. But we think, you know, you've got to stand up with your friends. When they are offered these positions, you know that they are going to get attacked. Especially in her situation, Will, being a Democrat, who, when she started with here on Seculo, she had left the Democrat Party, but hadn't joined the Republican Party until a couple weeks before the election. Had done work with RFK as well, and they did their own events where they were bringing in thousands of people and lots of new people to the MAGA world and to the Trump world. So why is it important for you to sign these petitions? Listen, if support the work that we do and you care about our issues, when our people are getting put into those positions, potentially, they've got to go through confirmation. We need to be there. We need to support them. Now, we're going to do that with our government affairs team. They will deliver these petitions. I've asked you if you're in those six states where she's is meeting or has met with senators from those states to make that positive phone call about Tulsi, the ACLJ, and reminder of the Seculo broadcast, a supportive call there. But no, she is going to come under some serious attack by the left. So our petition really does matter. We can make this really big. We're just starting this out as quick as we can so that we can move this petition along. Go and sign it, aclj.org/sign. And if you can't donate a dollar to the ACLJ right now because of where you are financially, you can still sign this petition for nothing at all. And it's that important. It's so important that our government affairs team and ACLJ Action is able to get this into the hands of every Senate office. But let's make sure when we do, before those confirmation hearings begin, that we've got as many thousands of ACLJ members and supporters on there as possible. And that takes you taking that action by signing the petition at aclj.org/sign. And Will, we're starting early because we know the attacks are going to be big. And this is, they targeted Matt Gaetz. That didn't last very long. Then there's been two other targets, Pete Hegseth and Tulsi Gabbard. And I think actually it's Tulsi Gabbard is now target one because she was a former Democrat.
That's right. And when you look at these intelligence officials' letters, whether it be the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation or now Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset letter that is coming, you always look at who the top line name is, because they get a bunch of people that have worked somewhere in some office or was some random undersecretary that you've never heard of. But you got to look at the top line names. And that tells you all you need to know about who the people are that are coming after Tulsi Gabbard. Wendy Sherman, Jordan, is the top line signature. This is the epitome of the swamp monster, yeah. Right? Wendy Sherman has worked in diplomacy or in the State Department since Bill Clinton's presidency. She was in Barack Obama's administration. She was the lead negotiator for the failed Iranian nuclear deal. So if you're going to start talking about intelligence and who should be the director of national intelligence, and someone that was the lead negotiator could not really understand what Iran was trying to pull over on you and got that through, and you're saying this person shouldn't be the director of national intelligence, that should be worn with a badge of honor. Because Wendy Sherman is the epitome of everything that is wrong with the State Department, the failed diplomacy of the left, and the Obama-Biden years of State Department diplomacy. She also, we found out, she knew, the ACLJ found out, she knew, even though the State Department denied it at first, that we were funding Mahmoud Abbas's son through an NGO, our State Department, to try and overthrow Bibi Netanyahu. She is against everything that conservatives voted for, and not just conservatives, the country, this election cycle. So if she's saying don't confirm Tulsi Gabbard, if she's trying to get senators to be on alert, I think that is one of the top reasons Tulsi Gabbard should be confirmed as the next director of national intelligence, because she will push back against these swamp monsters.
Yeah, I mean, she goes back to the North Korea days too. I mean, the agreements that were not being followed. But again, this is it's more than just were they Democrats or, because there's Republicans that list to it. They are all on the same boards of directors at the same universities, and they protect each other. It's like some kind of agreement that they have where politically they may be appointed by different people. And so they've got some years out, some years in, because you have the politically appointed branch of these agencies and you have the bureaucratic branch. But we know that if you've made friends and the bureaucratic branch supports you, I think most of us have to step back and say, okay, that's a warning sign. It's a warning sign, whether they're Republican or Democrat, that if these people hadn't come out and signed the letter, I think I'd be more nervous about these nominees, especially for these intelligence positions, because they don't want them to know what? The truth? They don't want them to know how politicized the intelligence has, or how we are, again, abusing the constitutional rights of Americans. So we make people out to be Russian assets who are still currently serving in our U.S. military with an over 2-decade career. It has a top-level security clearance. That wasn't removed then. Wasn't removed out, taken out of the military with her meetings in Syria. As Will said, meeting with basically every part of that multifaceted conflict before it even got worse. Support Tulsi's nomination. Go to aclj.org/sign. She's been a part of many of your days here as she joined our team. Let's stand with her. aclj.org/sign. Let's get thousands of signatures before we even begin the confirmation hearings.